From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Ralph Nader on the latest tobacco wars, a debate between the Green and Democratic Party candidates for the vacated congressional seat of Bill Richardson, and on this Mother's Day weekend, we hear from Rasheen McCalliskey, daughter of Bernadette Devlin McCalliskey, and Alice Walker. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The European Union's ban on hormone-treated beef is illegal. This, according to a panel of the World Trade Organization, potentially giving the American cattle industry a big victory, but also turning over new ground on issues of national sovereignty. In a preliminary report, which has not yet been released to the public, the organization says that Europe's import ban on beef produced with growth-enhancing hormones is illegal because it has no scientific justification. This, according to American officials who have seen it in a report in the New York Times. President Clinton has rebuffed pleas from Central American leaders seeking amnesty for immigrants who fled their region during the civil wars of the 1980s, but he tried to assuage their concerns by vowing humane enforcement of a tough new U.S. immigration law. During a summit meeting with fellow heads of state in San Jose, Costa Rica, the presidents of El Salvador and Nicaragua pressed Clinton to come to the aid of hundreds of thousands of people who sought refuge in the United States a decade ago and face the prospect of expulsion now that peace and stability have arrived, at least that according to the heads of state of these countries. The new law, which took effect April 1st, could affect some 300,000 Central Americans in the United States, including more than 30,000 in the nation's capital alone. This news from Arkansas. Noxious fumes continued to drift out of a chemical plant early today, hours after heat from a smoldering bag of pesticide triggered an explosion that killed three firefighters. The plant's owner said the pesticides in the chemical-filled warehouse were not supposed to be explosive. The blast blew out the cinder block wall that crushed the firemen who'd been sent to the plant to assess the danger of the smoking bag. From Akron, Ohio, Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company workers began returning to work immediately after the union overwhelmingly approved a 6-year contract with North America's largest tire maker. Rank-and-file members of the United Steelworkers of America endorsed the agreement by a 4-to-1 margin yesterday at 10:30 last night, ending a 7-state walkout by 12,000 workers over job security and pay. This news from Hanoi. The United States' first ambassador to post-war Vietnam arrived in Hanoi today, proclaiming a new era of relations between the former foes and a chance to bury their history of conflict and suspicion. Ambassador Dung Peterson, whose posting was delayed by domestic politics and legal wrangling, arrived 22 years after the victory over U.S.-backed forces of former South Vietnam. This news from Lubumbashi Zaire. Zairean rebels rejected today as absolute nonsense transition steps proposed by a summit of Central African leaders yesterday and vowed to topple dictator Mobutu Sese Seko unless he resigned. The rebels also said a second meeting on May 14th between Kabila and Mobutu would be aboard a South African Navy ship, the scene of their first meeting last Sunday. And some 25 fund managers, investors, and mining experts arrived in rebel-held Zaire today for talks with rebel leader Laurent Kabila. Earl Young, spokesperson for U.S.-based America Mineral Fields Incorporated, organizers of the visit, said the team included representatives of S.B. Warburg, C.M. Oliver of Canada, value investors, and leading banks from Europe and the United States. Kabila's alliance last month awarded the Kolwezi Copper Cobalt Tailings Project to America Mineral Fields in a $1 billion deal, which also included building a 200,000-ton-a-year zinc smelter in Kipushi near the Zambian border. And you're listening to Democracy Now! Earlier this week, a Florida jury unanimously rejected arguments that the cigarettes smoked by a Jacksonville woman for 34 years were a defective product that caused her death, and the jury declined to levy punitive damages against tobacco giant R.J. Reynolds. The Florida decision was a rare victory for the embattled tobacco industry. A federal judge recently upheld the Food and Drug Administration's authority to regulate nicotine as a drug, and the Supreme Court declined to hear constitutional challenges to a pair of Baltimore ordinances banning advertisements for cigarettes and liquor on billboards in residential areas. Meanwhile, the tobacco industry has recently begun negotiating with state attorney generals nationwide to reportedly pay more than $300 billion to cover smoking-related health care costs in return for set limits on the amount of money individuals could win in lawsuits against the industry. Joining us to talk about the latest battles in the tobacco wars is consumer activist and former Green presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy.
Well, can you tell us about these latest skirmishes in the tobacco wars?
Well, the tobacco industry wants a deal which is defined as giving up something in order to get something else. And what they want is, of course, a limitation on how much they have to pay in dollars to the state attorney generals, to the private plaintiff lawyers, and they want to limit it in two ways. One, by getting some sort of immunity from future lawsuits or caps on damages, and two, by limiting the overall pot of money that the state attorney generals want to reimburse these states for their Medicaid expenses arising out of the sicknesses of past smokers. The second thing they want is to make sure that there's no impact on their power to sell overseas, all over the world. Increasingly, that is going to be their big market: China, India, Eastern Europe, Russia, and South America. And they don't want any arrangement, any agreement to affect that. And third, they don't really want the kind of restrictions on indoor cigarette pollution that would cut cigarette smoking. Whenever a company eliminates smoking from all its premises, a good number of the people working for that company end up quitting smoking. So they don't want that. The other side, of course, wants strong controls on advertising, especially that is beamed toward children, like sports sponsorship. The second thing they want is a large amount of money to compensate for the horrific diseases that come from tobacco addiction. And the third is comprehensive food and drug regulation over the industry as possible through congressional enactment. Now, my view on this can be summed up basically in one sentence: no deals with drug dealers, only demands, and then worldwide. By that I mean, whatever a negotiation should go on should be entirely one way. You don't say to the tobacco companies, if you give the state attorney generals money and concede FDA regulation by statute, which is already, by the way, has been recognized by the court decision that you just referred to in North Carolina, we will give you immunity from lawsuits for future people who come down sick. We will let you addict the rest of the world from your United States base. We won't increase taxes on cigarettes, etc. Should never be that kind of negotiation. The momentum against the tobacco industry is growing by leaps and bounds. There's more damaging the documents that are going to be disclosed in future months, more whistleblowers, more losing their power in Congress. This is no time to cut a deal that will be minimally effective in the future and let the tobacco companies continue their addiction strategies.
Ralph Nader, who is doing this negotiation specifically on all sides?
Several state attorney generals from Mississippi, for example, Connecticut, a number of others, on behalf of 24 state attorney generals. That's number one. And then there are some of the leading plaintiff lawyers who are representing next of kin or victims of tobacco addiction on the grounds that the tobacco companies lied and deceived their customers. Imagine the tobacco companies are basically saying in court against these cases, oh, you folks knew all along that tobacco was dangerous. Of course, all along, the tobacco companies were telling these folks that tobacco didn't cause cancer, wasn't dangerous, and asked them to believe the tobacco companies. Really brazen hypocrisy that's going on. And then the third party in negotiations, and this is very controversial among health groups, is Matt Myers, who is the head of the general counsel of the Center for Tobacco Free Kids. And a new entry is the former head of the American Medical Association, Lonnie Bristow from California.
And so why do you believe that Matthew Myers, that the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids is participating in these negotiations?
Well, I think, he would say that he's participating, A, to find out what's going on, B, up to date, and B, to reject any immunity demands by the industry. I don't think it's quite that simple. I think that many of his allies, the American Lung Association, has just come out with a statement yesterday, very strong, against any kind of concessions to the tobacco companies. And the other two that he's worked with, the American Cancer Society and the American Heart Association, have got their fingers crossed. They can see some reason for Matt Myers to be at the negotiating table, and they can see some that are. In the meantime, the rest of the public health community is quite against any kind of two-way concessions between the state attorney generals and the public health community and the plaintiff lawyers on the one side and the tobacco companies on the other. The state attorney generals and the plaintiff lawyers do not have the full general interest in mind. The state attorney generals want to go back and say we got all these billions of dollars from the tobacco industry, and the plaintiff lawyers want to get compensation for their clients and a fee. There are broader health prevention strategies that need to be pushed by authorities and government and the public health community. One of them is higher taxes on tobacco, some curbs, serious curbs on any kind of promotion, and what I think is a really important priority, and that is to say to the rest of the world that any concessions that the tobacco companies have to give to the United States have to be offered to the rest of the world, a kind of most favored nation treatment. It's immoral for us to let the tobacco companies put this matter, as they put it, behind them in the United States and go out and start addicting another 500 million youngsters all over the world.
We're talking to Ralph Nader, who has long taken on all kinds of corporations, from auto manufacturers to the tobacco industry. I was looking at a piece in the Wall Street Journal the other day on Tuesday that talked about the effect of R.J. Reynolds Tobacco scoring a major victory in this Jacksonville case and talking about it as a bellwether for future litigation against the $45 billion a year tobacco industry. Do you think that the verdict that came down this week in Jacksonville could mean that the tobacco industries overall are going to take a harder stance, if it's possible?
Well, they may want to use that to give the appearance that they're going to take a harder stand, but inside their cloistered offices, they know that these lawsuits turn on the particular facts of the particular addicted plaintiff, and some are good cases factually and some aren't. In the case in Florida, for example, the woman switched brands from R.J. Reynolds to Philip Morris. That, of course, weakened the case. And there are other factors in the case that made it less likely that she would prevail. But I'll tell you, the tobacco companies are less worried about these compensation tort cases, per se, in terms of money they have to give, than in the potential punitive damages, which could be much larger. That's why they want eliminate or cap punitive damages, and about the documents that have to be disclosed. None of this latest momentum against the tobacco industry from Congress, from the FDA, from the media, would ever occurred without those few people filing suit against the tobacco companies under the product liability laws and getting the internal documents that began this historic reversal of public opposition to the tobacco industry in a much more generic way, that showed that they were lying, they were deceiving, they did everything possible to market their products to kids, and the facts bear it out. 90% of all habitual smokers get hooked before they reach 18 years of age, many of them at 13, 14, 15. And that's what they're going to try to do increasingly overseas. They, for example, Philip Morris controls 80% of the tobacco industry in one of the Eastern European countries. I think it's Hungary. And there are much higher smoking rates in places like Japan. And they were using the State Department to break down the, quote, trade barriers to their tobacco products in places like Thailand and Japan. Well, this has got to come to an end. Again, no deals with these tobacco drug dealers, only demands, and then worldwide. We must extend this worldwide, and there should be a good many governments who would like the billions of dollars from the tobacco companies to do something about smoking and to compensate for the ravages of the disease from smoking in their countries.
Ralph Nader, I wanted to change the subject in this last few minutes before we move on to the debate that we're going to have in just a minute between the Democratic and Green Party candidates in the special election that is taking place next week in New Mexico for Bill Richardson's seat. I know you were just out in New Mexico, and we all assume we know where you stand on this issue of Carol Miller versus Eric Cerna. That's the Democrat versus the Green Party candidate, Carol Miller, showing a strong standing, you know, considering she is a third party candidate. What is your take on this election? We assume you're supporting her.
Yes, Carol Miller is a proven public health advocate. She's worked as an emergency medical technician in northern New Mexico. She's been on Hillary Clinton's task force on health insurance, where she wanted a single payer. I mean, she's lived what she's advocating. Eric Cerna was a state regulator who didn't regulate. Now he's taking money from the companies that he didn't regulate, and a very, very unexciting Democrat. I think this is the race where the Green Party is going to come very close, if not win, but come close. This is not a 4 or 5% election race. And there's a lot of volunteers. Of course, she is being outspent. She spent about $20,000. He's going to spend $600,000 to $700,000. But the potential in the race comes from the low turnout, Amy. This is a May 13th by-election, in effect, because Bill Richardson has to resign because he was appointed by Clinton to be ambassador to the United Nations. And it's going to be a very low turnout. So whoever gets out the vote in that third congressional district in New Mexico is going to have a significant advantage.
Well, Ralph Nader, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Ralph Nader, longtime consumer activist and former Green Party presidential candidate, as we move on to look at this race in New Mexico. On May 13th, voters in New Mexico's 3rd Congressional District will go to the polls to elect a replacement for Representative Bill Richardson, who gave up his seat to become ambassador to the United Nations. 3/5 of the voters in the district are Hispanic or Indian, and the district itself is divided between the Hispanic counties of northern New Mexico and the energy-rich Indian lands along the Arizona border. Santa Fe, the 3rd largest city in the state, is the centerpiece of the region. The district is one of sharp contrasts. Unemployment is extremely high in some areas, hitting as high as 30% in the most rural areas of the north. Yet there's also the Anglo community of Los Alamos, where the atomic bomb was developed, one of the wealthiest counties in the country. That area is largely Republican, but with a clear independent streak. Third-party presidential candidate, for example, John Anderson, won 15% of the vote in 1980. Indians, most of them Navajo, usually vote Democrat, but they tend to turn out in small numbers. The largest county in the region is San Juan, where a conservative Anglo population settled to tap the vast supply of oil, gas, and coal in the Four Corners area. Now, next Tuesday's race pits Democratic candidate Eric Cerna, a Hispanic state official and New Mexico native, against conservative Republican Bill Redman. But the race has also seen the emergence of a strong third-party candidate, Carol Miller of the Green Party, a development that has many pundits in Washington glancing down to New Mexico with more than a passing interest. We invited the Republican, the Democrat, and the Green Party candidate on the show to join us for a debate. Unfortunately, we did not get a response back from Republican Bill Redman. But when we come back, we're going to turn to the Democrat and Green Party candidate, Carol Miller, and Eric Cerna. There are other candidates in the race, a Libertarian, a Reform Party candidate, and three write-in candidates. But for today, it's Eric Cerna versus Carol Miller. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As I said, we are going to the third congressional district race in New Mexico, that special election, to replace Bill Richardson, who's become the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. We're pleased today to be joined by two candidates from the New Mexico race. Eric Cerna is with us, a New Mexico State Corporation Commissioner, an elected post he's held for the past 15 years. The Corporation Commission regulates and licenses businesses in New Mexico, including the telecommunications industry, the phone industry. He was national co-chair of the first Clinton-Gore Adelante con Clinton election campaign aimed at America's Hispanic voters. In 96, he was New Mexico co-chair of the Clinton-Gore re-election campaign. And he's also past chairman of the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, known as MALDEF. Carol Miller is the Green Party candidate to replace Bill Richardson. Formerly a Democrat, she lost in the Democratic State Senate primary last year. She runs a community health clinic in New Mexico and was a member of the 1993 Presidential Health Care Reform Task Force led by Hillary Clinton. Let's begin with the Democrat, Eric Cerna. Can you tell us what the issues are that you're running on?
Well, the issues I am running on are the issues that impact most directly on the 3rd Congressional District, those being education and educational opportunity for the young people in this area. Retraining of our adult population is a big issue here. Diversity of our economy. There's too much reliance in this area on the federal dollar. We need to diversify our economy. We need to get the type of employment in here that is sustainable, labor-intensive, and long-term. Crime is another big concern in the area. There's too much crime, too many drugs, too many guns on the streets. People are concerned about that. And then, of course, our environment in New Mexico is a wonderful environment. We want to protect it. It's irreplaceable, and people are concerned that the protection of this environment has to be stronger. The other issue that is of utmost importance in the area is health care and insurance affordability. Here in New Mexico and in the 3rd Congressional District, we have not done a good job about insuring our children and taking care of our children. We have a very high statistic of uninsured children. But those are the issues of concern amongst others, but those are the major issues in this 3rd Congressional District.
Carol Miller of the Green Party, what are you running on?
Well, I have a great platform to run on. And what is so exciting for me is really what the Green Party is doing is building a movement for change in this country. And this campaign is about me and what I stand for because I'm running on the Green Party platform, which is the only party right now that stands for social justice as well as protecting the environment. And I want to give an example. Related to right now, there's been a bipartisan, and I put that in quotes because it's starting to feel more and more like a one corporate party representing special interests. There was just a bipartisan budget deal that I believe was made on the backs of the poor once again while we got a capital gains tax and some other tax breaks for the rich. And what having a Green in Congress will do is have someone who could be a voice standing up for what the people want. And I'll give an example because of what Mr. Cerna said, that The Clinton education plan is not good for this district. Maybe it's good for some parts of the country, but this is, as you stated, one of the lowest income districts in the whole country, and we don't really need tax credits to get our kids through college. We have an epidemic of dropouts here, where so many children are in schools that are underfunded. Our teachers are very poorly paid. We need an education plan that really looks at this district and puts the money where the need is early on. Another thing that the Democrats are talking about is kid care. The first bill I hope to co-sponsor is H.R. 1200, Representative McDermott's American Health Security Act, which he has bravely been putting out there as the universal health care that will allow us to take care of everyone. The Corporation Commission regulates insurance. Mr. Cerna has had 15 years to work at least on the small insurers that insure in the state to provide a health insurance plan which could be affordable by working New Mexicans. So I think it's time to not just go in and have to support what your party tells you is best, but what is truly best for everyone in your district.
Eric Cerna, your response on the issue of health care.
Well, first of all, Carol should know better, having spent so much time in that area, about what our regulatory authority is. And she also knows my strong record of advocacy on the commission. And it is I who has spoken out and been a champion for people throughout the state and in the 3rd Congressional District. We are limited in our regulatory authority. And in those areas where we are able to make a difference, we have made a difference. We recently passed the strongest HMO rule and set of regulations in the country. It's more patient-friendly, more consumer-oriented, and protective of the rights of the patient and the consumer. So for Carol to say that when she knows better is unfortunate, especially since she touts herself a healthcare specialist. There are many initiatives we have started, not only in the healthcare industry, but when it comes to automobile insurance, many initiatives that we proposed and got through the legislature which have assisted. Now, the whole insurance arena and the rates that people are having to pay are driven by many factors, not the least of which is fraud. There's a lot of fraud throughout this country and in New Mexico that has caused rates to go up, not only in health care, but also in your automobile insurance and your property and casualty lines. And we have done much to try to break that nasty cycle of fraud, including the creation of a fraud bureau this last legislative session, which will help to track down some of these fraudulent claims and some of these people who are making them. So over the 15 years that I have been in this office, we have seen tougher regulatory authority within our jurisdiction, but we have to keep in mind that in the Congress, where there is a lot going on and that preempts our regulatory authority a lot, that's where a lot of changes need to be made. In the Congress, with my knowledge, with my background, I'll be able to help make those changes.
Commissioner Cerna, do you support single-payer health care plan?
Not necessarily. What I do support, I think we need to be careful about touting a national universal health care system. Government is big enough. We don't need that much government interference. What we need are cooperative efforts between the public and the private sector. And these HMOs, whether we like them or not, they are a fact of life right now. So the best we can do as regulators and as public officials is to make sure we have strong rules that protect the consumer, that protect the patient.
Well, speaking of another health issue, let's talk about environmental health. Carol Miller, your views on nuclear power and nuclear weapons, Los Alamos being a site of nuclear weapons development. Can you tell us what the issue is there and where you stand on it?
Okay. Well, I'm a longstanding anti-nuclear activist and environmentalist, and I think it's significant that Helen Caldicott has called this campaign to cheer us on, because the issues she stands for, ending nuclear power, is very important to me. I'm concerned that the economic development that is being offered to the central part of this district out of Los Alamos is what is euphemistically known as the Stockpile Stewardship Program. And what that program really is creating what's called the second generation of nuclear weapons. And we're supposed to be comforted as citizens that these weapons are going to be tested, not by underground testing, because, of course, the U.S. supported the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, but they're going to be tested by computer simulation. And I find that very worrisome. I don't think we need another generation of nuclear weapons. I think we need to get rid of the weapons that we have right now. I would like to see the funding received by Los Alamos going to figure out. There is a lot of scientific genius and talent there. I would like them to be working on making the waste that we have right now safer than it is, figuring out something that we can do with it so that it is not causing so many environmental problems, not only here but around the world.
Eric Cerny, you're known as a supporter of the Los Alamos community.
Yes, and I am a strong supporter of the community, which doesn't necessarily mean I'm a strong supporter of nuclear power or the creation or continuation of the weaponry. You know, Los Alamos Scientific Laboratories, it's a treasure trove up there, and Carol and I do agree that there's a lot of talent up there. I think there's a lot of talent that could be used to help the surrounding communities, and I've talked to scientists up there who want to do that. And as strong as that lab is for the surrounding communities, I think sometimes they lose sight of the contribution that the surrounding communities make to the lab. There are a lot of people from Espanola, for example, that work up there that have helped make that lab a strong lab, and they are very supportive of it. To support a community is one thing, but to support some of the things that go on up there are another thing. And we don't know a lot of the things that are going on. But I think, as I agree with Carol, that we need to use the talent, the brain power that we have up there to help come up with alternative ways of storage of this nuclear waste that is up there. And there are several ways that have been proposed of doing it. But the one thing that we need to make sure is that when we talk about the WHIP site, for example, there's a lot of debate and has been debate for several years as to whether it should open or not. And I think there is agreement between Carol and myself that it should not open until it has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt that it is safe. I am not convinced at this point that it is safe.
And your stance on the second generation of nuclear weapons?
Well, we have to, and they are up. They are doing so in Los Alamos. They are making sure that the parts the parts must be maintained. There's not going to be any more new nuclear weaponry produced, but the parts have to be maintained and in a fashion that is safe. We do need to have a strong defense, and I do support that. And it's got to be done in a way that is protective of our citizenry up there and throughout the state and the 3rd Congressional District.
We're talking to two candidates who are running in the 3rd Congressional District in New Mexico in a special election for the seat of Bill Richardson, who's now U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Eric Cerny is our guest, a longtime commissioner on the State Corporation Commission. And Carol Miller, who runs a community health clinic in New Mexico, was a longtime Democratic activist, is now running for the congressional seat on the Green Party ticket. Carol Miller, you made a name for yourself by saying that you would limit your spending to $100,000 on this campaign, and you challenged other candidates to do the same. Can you explain your philosophy there? And Eric Cerny, if you then could respond why you chose not to take up this challenge.
Well, I think it's very important that citizens feel as if they can run for government, and community activists who have so much talent in bringing people together into building a movement, which we really need right now. And the money in politics has become more and more offensive. There's a belief, I saw a survey recently that said that most of the people in the United States think that even good people become corrupt when they go to Washington, because there's this feeling that they're forced to immediately start raising more and more money for their reelection. And because I do work in our community organizations and with the Indian tribes here in New Mexico, I think I really know the value of money to our communities. So when we talked about setting a cap for this election, I thought $100,000, we looked at that budget, it included mailings, it included television, it included a lot of radio, it included printing, and that was all I could spend. Because I do fundraising, and I think of $50,000 is an ambulance. So for $100,000, two communities that desperately need new ambulances could have them. It's been said that Mr. Cerna's campaign is going to run about $700,000. Well, that's the entire budget for KUNM radio station for a year. That gives us our information and education 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And that's the station that's going to be playing this radio program. So I just think there are so many needs out there. We in the communities are always looking for money, trying to keep our programs going. And to use it to try and basically buy an election through a lot of additional name recognition, I think we need to put an end for it. I have pledged that on May 14th, in or out of the Congress, I'm going to start focusing very seriously, immediately, on campaign finance reform.
Eric Cerna, why did you say you would not agree to a cap on spending?
Well, first of all, Carol is going to wait until May 14th to start her campaign for campaign finance reform.
My full-time commitment to
I have already started and will continue to speak out on this issue. Now, I think it is easy for somebody to say that they want it capped at a certain amount, realistically knowing that perhaps they couldn't raise over that amount with their best efforts. Now, these campaigns are too expensive. We all agree with that. But there are campaign laws, and we all are complying with them. The fact that I am able to raise additional monies should not be held against me, especially when one looks at where the money is coming from. Sure, there are PAC dollars there. But most of the money that is received from the hundreds of contributors are from people throughout the district and throughout the state that know of my long-time public service. These are people who want to participate in the process and who should be allowed to. I'm talking about people who have donated $5 and those who have gone up to the maximum of $1,000. And there are hundreds of such contributors. But I would work hard to limit campaign spending. I would also like to curb the influence of PACs. And I want to end this soft money system that, in my opinion, has tarnished our government. But we have to do it in a fashion that is realistic and balanced.
Well, let me ask you
something. Can I just say something? Because we have looked at least the first campaign finance report that was filed by Mr. Cerna, and the small contributions are there, of course, but it doesn't come close to some of the special interest in PAC money. And even though it is not illegal, he does accept money from industries that are regulated by the Corporation Commission, and we have a problem with that. It's legal, but to us it does not appear ethical, and it's like, what do you buy with this money? Right now we get 50 radio spots a day from President Clinton touting his education plan that isn't even good for the majority of the people in this district. I mean, it's what do you get for that money? And that feeling that because you can raise money, that's okay. I think you have to look at what you get for that. We get thousands of signs all over working the name recognition thing. It's a very windy spring. Half of them have already blown away and been replaced. I think that, you know, we really need to look at what does the money buy and what could that money buy in these communities.
Well, what's wrong with working hard in a campaign? What's wrong with putting up signs? I mean, that is the political process. It's unfortunate that the cynicism in America that is fostered by the kinds of comments that Carol just made, and also by a radio talk show host that, in my opinion, sometimes have crossed the lines and gone from talk radio to hate radio, that just are so negative and divisive. You know, what's wrong with working hard in a campaign, following the rules, and doing a campaign within those confines?
Well, Eric,
I mean, it always comes up every election year, not only for people such as myself, but every candidate, every public servant. There are always these people who are running against him who bring this up during the election cycle. And it just adds to the cynicism.
Eric Serna, we have to break, but we will continue this debate between you, the Democratic candidate, and the New Mexico 3rd Congressional District race that is going to be taking place next week to replace Bill Richardson, who's become the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, and Carol Miller, the Green Party candidate. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we continue the debate between two candidates in the 3rd congressional race in New Mexico that takes place on May 13th. We are talking to Eric Serna. He is a New Mexico State Corporation Commissioner, an elected post that he's held for the past 15 years. The Corporation Commission regulates and licenses businesses in New Mexico. And Carol Miller is with us. She is the Green Party candidate to replace Bill Richardson. I should say we invited the Republican candidate, but he has not gotten back to us over the last few days. So we are here with these two candidates. There is also a Libertarian and a Reform Party candidate, as well as three write-in candidates. But Eric Serna, I want to stay with you for a minute. There was an article that came out in Crossroads that was written by two writers, one of them being Roger Morris, who is known for writing the book about the Clintons and Whitewater. And it's extremely critical of your tenure on the Corporation Commission of New Mexico. And it says that you support the acceptance of contributions from companies that you regulate.
It's not true. I don't support that theory. What I do support are the laws as they exist, and that includes the allowance for legal contributions. And they are minimal compared to all of the other contributions which I receive. But Roger Morris, let's not forget, this was the dirty tricks guy during the Nixon administration. All he has done is moved to New Mexico and continued his M.O.
But how do you justify accepting contributions from the industries that you regulate?
You know, I don't have to justify it because it's a small amount compared to the total contributions which I receive. And most candidates, including myself, treat this at arm's length. I don't know till the reports are filed what contributions have been made usually. And let's talk about disclosure. It was me who filed my tax returns publicly. And I'm not talking about just the first and the last sheet. I'm talking about all of the sheets in between. So, I mean, there's nothing that I fear disclosing to the public, and I would challenge my opponents to disclose as I have.
Well, we have disclosed also, and this is such a straw man kind of argument. I mean, the Crosswinds article doesn't even have some of the recent things that have come out since the campaign began. But for people who don't know what it is, it's a year-by-year documentary. And it's so disingenuous to that argument that I don't even know where the money comes from. If you receive money from the ARCO PAC in one election, you could say, I don't think I should take that money for this one. That one was close to the edge. We regulate the oil and gas industry. There have been numerous opportunities for Mr. Serna to have said what kind of money he won't take. Many people will not take alcohol and tobacco money because they think there's an ethical issue there. I have looked at his campaign report, and I know where the contributions are coming from, and certainly he has had the opportunity to look at that same report, too. And the soft money issue is another whole thing, and the PAC money. This is a classic example, and the one thing I want to say, this thing of playing by the rules are made in our state by state legislators, which, you know, are controlled, our legislature has been controlled by the Democratic Party. They wouldn't consider, they wouldn't move a campaign finance bill this year. The rules are made by Congress. You want to send someone to Congress who does not say, elect me under the old rules, and when I get there, I'll do something about it. You want to elect someone to the Congress who is committed to this issue, who says, I can't take that kind of money. I didn't focus on raising money because we're building a movement. We would rather in the Green Party get 100 new volunteers than have $100,000.
We don't regulate the oil and gas industry, Carol, so you're misinformed there.
They're corporations.
Let me add that my 20 years of public service is a record which I am proud of. And the small instances that people have brought up over a 20-year period that in most part are mischaracterized and in some instances outright false is unfair to me. However, I think the public, which has returned me to office time and again, understands what I stand for. They understand that I have worked hard and have been the most pro-consumer advocate on the commission over that period of time. It is I who have worked for senior citizens, who have implemented low-income telephone assistance programs, who have been protective of citizen rights. And this is a continual pattern throughout my public service career. And because one goes through and I do have a record, and that's good and bad, because when you have a record, every now and then, if there's a misstep, that comes up every campaign. As 15 years ago, something happened, it comes up, and that's part of the political process, and I accept it. But the public are too smart. They know when these personal attacks come that they weigh that against my long-term public service, and they understand that that service has been good, it's been done with integrity, and it's been protective of the citizenry of New Mexico and of those in the 3rd Congressional District, and I'm very proud of that.
And on that note, we have to wrap up this debate. We want to thank you very much, Eric Cerna, New Mexico State Corporation Commissioner, as well as Carol Miller, the Green Party candidate, for your participation in this discussion about issues in your district that certainly, I think, are national and international in scope. The district is the 3rd Congressional District of New Mexico. The special election for Bill Richardson's seat in Congress will take place on May 13th, and we'll report to our listeners around the country what happens. You're listening to Democracy Now! And today, as we move into a weekend that'll be capped by Sunday, Mother's Day, we thought we'd bring you a few Mother's Day thoughts. 1.5 million American children will be separated from a parent in prison this Mother's Day, making them the youngest and most vulnerable victims of the national fervor for incarceration. This according to a broad coalition of conservative and liberal groups. The coalition, which includes conservative Christian groups like the Family Research Council and liberal civil rights advocates like the ACLU, rallied on the steps of the Capitol Wednesday to spotlight the plight of thousands of children growing up with parents in prison and to encourage efforts to break the intergenerational pattern of incarceration. Effective solutions advocated by sponsors of the rally include drug treatment, literacy and job training, mentoring programs, and family counseling. On the note of mothers in prison, Roisin McCloskey, the 25-year-old daughter of Irish civil rights leader Bernadette Devlin McCloskey, is currently being held without charge in solitary confinement in London's Holloway Prison. She's facing extradition to Germany on allegations that she plotted to kill British Army soldiers stationed in Germany, but those allegations have hardly been brought to the surface for her to be able to answer. Last month, she wrote a letter to her supporters, and this is read by actress Jenny Conway.
Firstly, myself and Sean and my family would like to thank everyone for their active support And I'd like to say what an overwhelming difference it makes to know that people do care, especially when surrounded by people who don't. It's in a situation like this that you realise that it is the thought that really counts. When you're isolated from everyone, and everything you do and say is watched and monitored, your thoughts are the only thing that remains your own, which actually makes it hard to share them with anyone. So I'll hope you'll excuse me if this is a bit dull and muted. Although everyone knows what a prison is, I don't think anyone can imagine how it is until they experience it. There are no colours. Everything is white or beige, and there's no shapes. It's all straight lines and right angles, all smooth to touch. There's no smells, and it's probably a relief that the food doesn't taste. But the oddest thing is the noise. There's no natural noise. It's all metallic. Even voices don't sound natural. They lack the life of emotion or something. And it's then that you really notice that what is really missing in prison is the beginning and the end of life. There's no children and no old people. So the emotions and reactions that old and young evoke aren't here. There's no real laughter or innocence or wisdom or need to care and comfort others. But that's where thoughts make all the difference and remind you that life isn't like this. And there's more to people than prison allows you to see and feel. It's this closed and controlled environment that leads to closed and biased minds. Out of nearly 30 women with children in the prison, only 2 would sit in a room with me. But when I'm treated like such a danger that I'm put in a high security male prison, why wouldn't they be fearful and object to having to associate with what is presented as a threat to the little they have for themselves? There's a prison rule that prisoners cannot share, lend, or give anything to other prisoners. So that while you are removed from your family and friends, you are prevented from building new relationships. But if you're an Irish prisoner in England, they segregate you. They build a prison within a prison. With the men, they house them in an SSU, special security unit. And as they haven't got an SSU for females, I get a human equivalent, with 2 shadow officers accompanying at all times. Human bookends, giving me my own prison within a prison. The only problem with this is that there is no prison for thoughts. You can't keep people from thinking, and you can't take a thought away from someone. So to know that I'm in your thoughts makes such a difference to my thoughts and my heart that I hope you can imagine even a small part of the great lift it gives me knowing that I'm only alone in the physical sense. I'm due a month from today, and I'm very aware that it's only through people making their thoughts known that I'm being allowed to keep my baby. So while thanking you for all the active support, I really want to thank everyone everywhere for their thoughts. Roisin McAllister.
She's like the river that never runs dry. She's like the sun beaming on the lee shore.
And that was a letter written
by Roisin McAllister to her supporters. She is expected to give birth now any day in prison. And we'll end today's show with some poetry of Alice Walker. Alice Walker came to New York a few weeks ago at the invitation of the Learning Alliance, a nonprofit educational group here that brings grassroots activists, authors, writers together to speak with audiences. And she shared some of her poetry.
I want to read some poems to you to thank you for your presence. These are poems that I wrote over many years, and I actually was asked to give a commencement address at my old school, Spelman, in Atlanta. And I wanted to give the women there something really meaningful, and so I decided to give them a few of my poems that I had written over the years. And this first one is called Expect Nothing, and it's sort of about the openness of no expectation. Expect nothing. Live frugally on surprise. Become a stranger to need of pity. Or if compassion be freely given out, take only enough. Stop short of the urge to plead, then purge away the need. Wish for nothing larger than your own small heart, or greater than a star. Tame wild disappointment with caress unmoved and cold. Make of it a paka for your soul. Consider the reason why so tiny human giant exists at all, so scared, so unwise, but expect nothing. Live frugally on surprise. And this next poem, I was wanting to talk to them about how hard it is when you sometimes, usually this happens in college, you begin to understand that the jewelry around somebody's neck cost the life of human beings. And I was thinking of a photograph of an African miner who was actually going to be underground his entire life, digging out the diamonds that would wind up on the necks of the people that you and I see every day. This is called The Diamonds on Liz's Bosom. The diamonds on Liz's bosom are not as bright as his eyes the morning they took him to work in the mines. The rubies in Nancy's jewel box, oh, how Ron loves red, not as vivid as the despair in his children's frowns. Oh, those Africans, everywhere you look, they're bleeding and crying, crying and bleeding on some of the whitest necks in your town. And then how to change this? And all change starts with the self. This is called We Alone. We alone can devalue gold by not caring if it falls or rises in the marketplace. Wherever there is gold, there is a chain, you know. And if your chain is gold, so much the worse for you. Feathers, shells, and C-shaped stones are all as rare. This could be our revolution, to love what is plentiful as much as what is scarce. And then I wanted to talk to them about those.
And you've been listening to a few poems of Alice Walker that will continue to play. Again, she was reading in New York in an event sponsored by the New York-based Learning Alliance. Author, feminist, poet, Alice Walker. And we're going to go out today with the music of Bobby McFerrin, the 23rd Psalm, in a song dedicated, he says, to his mother. Democracy Now! Is produced by Dan Coughlin, our engineer and assistant producer, Errol Maitland. Julie Drizin is our executive producer. Special thanks to Kenneth Mason, our engineer for the last year. Ken leaves us this week to go on to a brighter and better future. All of us at Democracy Now! Will miss his reliability, patience, advice, intelligence, and caring. Good luck, Ken. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call to order a cassette, 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Happy Mother's Day to all of you. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! There is nothing that can shake